Pygmalion by George Bernard Shaw. Act 3. It is Mrs. Higgins' at-home day. Nobody has yet arrived. Her drawing room in a flat on Chelsea Embankment has three windows looking on the river, and the ceiling is not so lofty as it would be in an older house of the same pretension. The windows are open, giving access to a balcony with flowers in pots. If you stand with your face to the windows, you have the fireplace on your left and the door in the right-hand wall close to the corner nearest the window. Mrs. Higgins was brought up on Morris and Burne-Jones, and her room, which is very unlike her son's room in Wimpole Street, is not crowded with furniture and little tables and knick-knacks. In the middle of the room there is a big ottoman, and this, with the carpet, the Morris wallpapers, and the Morris chintz window curtains and brocade covers of the ottoman and its cushions, supply all the ornament, and are much too handsome to be hidden by odds and ends of useless things. A few good oil paintings, from the exhibitions in the Grosvenor Gallery 30 years ago, the Burne-Jones, not the Whistler side of them, are on the walls. The only landscape is a Cecil Lawson on the scale of a Rubens. There is a portrait of Mrs. Higgins, as she was when she defied fashion in her youth, in one of the beautiful Rossettian costumes which, when caricatured by people who did not understand, led to the absurdities of popular aestheticism in the 1870s. In the corner, diagonally opposite the door, Mrs. Higgins, now over 60 and long past taking the trouble to dress out of the fashion, sits writing at an elegantly simple writing table with a bell button within reach of her hand. There is a Chippendale chair further back in the room between her and the window nearest her side. At the other side of the room, further forward, is an Elizabethan chair roughly carved in the taste of Inigo Jones. On the same side, a piano in a decorated case. The corner between the fireplace and the window is occupied by a divan cushioned in Morris chintz. It is between 4 and 5 in the afternoon. The door is opened violently, and Higgins enters with his hat on. Mrs. Higgins is dismayed and speaks. "Henry, what are you doing here today? It is my at-home day. You promised not to come." As he bends to kiss her, she takes his hat off and presents it to him. "Oh, bother!" He throws the hat down on the table. "Go home at once." Higgins kisses his mother. "I know, mother, I came on purpose." "But you mustn't. I'm serious, Henry. You offend all my friends. They stop coming whenever they meet you." "Nonsense. I know I have no small talk, but people don't mind." He sits on the settee. "Oh, don't they? Small talk indeed. What about your lodge talk? Really, dear, you mustn't stay." "I must. I've a job for you, a phonetic job." "No use, dear, I'm sorry, but I can't get round your vowels, and though I like to get pretty postcards in your patent shorthand, I always have to read the copies in ordinary writing you so thoughtfully send me." "Well, this isn't a phonetic job." "You said it was." "Not your part of it. I've picked up a girl." "Does that mean that some girl has picked you up?" "Not at all. I don't mean a love affair." "What a pity." "Why?" "Well, you never fall in love with anyone under 45. When will you discover that there are some rather nice-looking young women about?"
"Oh, I can't be bothered with young women. My idea of a lovable woman is something as like you as possible. I shall never get into the way of seriously liking young women. Some habits lie too deep to be changed."
Higgins rises abruptly and walks about jingling his money and his keys in his trouser pockets.
"Besides, they're all idiots." "Do you know what you would do if you really loved me, Henry?"
"Oh, bother. What? Marry, I suppose?"
"No. Stop fidgeting and take your hands out of your pockets."
With a gesture of despair, he obeys and sits down again.
"That's a good boy. Now, tell me about the girl."
"She's coming to see you."
"I don't remember asking her."
"You didn't. I asked her. If you'd known her, you wouldn't have asked her."
"Indeed. Why?"
"Well, it's like this. She's a common flower girl. I picked her off the curbstone."
"And invited her to my at-home?"
Higgins rises and comes to her to coax her.
"Oh, that'll be all right. I've taught her to speak properly, and she has strict orders as to her behavior. She's to keep to two subjects, the weather and everybody's health. Fine day, and how do you do, you know, and not to let herself go on things in general. That will be safe."
"Safe? To talk about our health, about our insides,
perhaps about our outsides. How could you be so silly, Henry?
Higgins is impatient. Well, she must talk about something. He controls himself and sits down again.
Oh, she'll be all right. Don't you fuss. Pickering is in it with me. I've a sort of bet on that I'll pass her off as a duchess in 6 months. I started on her some months ago, and she's getting on like a house on fire. I shall win my bet. She has a quick ear, and she's been easier to teach than my middle-class pupils, because she's had to learn a complete new language. She talks English almost as you talk French.
That's satisfactory at all events.
Well, it is and it isn't.
What does that mean?
Well, you see, I've got her pronunciation all right, but you have to consider not only how a girl pronounces, but what she pronounces, and that's where...
At this point they are interrupted by the parlourmaid announcing guests. The parlourmaid speaks.
Mrs. and Miss Ainsford Hill.
The parlourmaid withdraws.
Oh, Lord.
Higgins rises, snatches his hat from the table, and makes for the door, but before he reaches it, his mother introduces him. Mrs. and Miss Ainsford Hill are the mother and daughter who sheltered from the rain in Covent Garden. The mother is well-bred, quiet, and has the habitual anxiety of straitened means. The daughter has acquired a gay air of being very much at home in society, the bravado of genteel poverty. Mrs. Ainsford Hill speaks to Mrs. Higgins.
How do you do?
They shake hands.
Oh, how do you do?
She shakes. Mrs. Higgins does an introduction.
My son, Henry. Your celebrated son. I have so longed to meet you, Professor Higgins.
Higgins, glumly and making no movement in her direction, responds.
Delighted.
Miss Ainsford Hill speaks, going to him with confident familiarity.
How do you do?
Higgins stares at her.
I've seen you before somewhere. I haven't the ghost of a notion where, but I've heard your voice.
He speaks drearily.
It doesn't matter. You'd better sit down. I'm sorry to say that my celebrated son has no manners. You mustn't mind him.
Miss Ainsford Hill replies gaily.
I don't.
She sits in the Elizabethan chair. Mrs. Ainsford Hill is a bit bewildered and speaks.
Oh, not at all.
She sits on the ottoman between her daughter and Mrs. Higgins, who has turned her chair away from the writing table.
Oh, have I been rude? I didn't mean to be.
Henry goes to the central window, through which, with his back to the company, he contemplates the river and the flowers in Battersea Park on the opposite bank, as if they were a frozen dessert. The parlourmaid returns, ushering in Pickering.
Colonel Pickering,
the parlourmaid withdraws.
How do you do, Mrs. Higgins? So glad you've come. Do you know Mrs. Ainsford Hill? Miss Ainsford Hill?
There is an exchange of bows. The colonel brings the Chippendale chair a little forward between Mrs. Hill and Mrs. Higgins and sits down.
Has Henry told you what we've come for?
Higgins speaks over his shoulder.
We were interrupted, damn it. Oh, Henry, Henry, really?
Mrs. Ainsford Hill half rises.
Are we in the way?
Mrs. Higgins rises and makes her sit down again.
No, no, you couldn't have come more fortunately. We want you to meet a friend of ours.
Higgins turns hopefully and speaks.
Yes, by George, we want two or three people. You'll do as well as anybody else.
The parlourmaid returns, ushering in Freddy. The parlourmaid speaks.
Mr. Ainsford Hill.
Higgins, almost audibly and past endurance.
God of heaven, another of them.
Freddy, shaking hands with Mrs. Higgins.
Ardy-do. Very good of you to come.
And she introduces
Colonel Pickering.
Freddy, bowing.
Ardy-do. I don't think you know my son, Professor Higgins.
Freddy goes to Higgins.
Ardy-do.
Higgins, looking at him much as if he were a pickpocket.
I'll take my oath I've met you before somewhere. Where was it? Oh, I don't think so.
Higgins speaks resignedly.
It don't matter, anyhow. Sit down.
He shakes Freddy's hand and almost slings him on the ottoman with his face to the windows, then comes round to the other side of it.
Well, here we are, anyhow.
He sits down on the ottoman next to Mrs. Ainsford Hill on her left. And now, what the devil are we going to talk about until Eliza comes?
Henry, you're the life and soul of the Royal Society's soirees, but really, you're rather trying on more commonplace occasions. Am I? Very sorry. I suppose I am, you know.
Mrs. Ainsford
Hill, who considers Higgins quite eligible matrimonially, speaks.
I sympathize. I haven't any small talk if people would only be frank and say what they really think.
Higgins relapses into gloom.
Lord forbid.
Mrs. Eynsford Hill, taking up on her daughter's cue.
But why?
Oh, what they think they ought to think is bad enough, Lord knows, but what they really think would break up the whole show. Do you suppose it would be really agreeable if I were to come out now with what I really think?
Is it so very cynical?
Cynical? Who the dickens said it was cynical? I mean it wouldn't be decent.
Oh, I'm sure you don't mean that, Mr. Higgins.
You see, we're all savages, more or less. We're supposed to be civilized and cultured, to know all about poetry and philosophy and art and science and so on. But how many of us know even the meanings of these names?
Speaking to Miss Hill.
What do you know of poetry?
Speaking to Mrs. Hill.
What do you know of science?
And indicating Freddy.
What does he know of art or science or anything else? What the devil do you imagine I know of philosophy?
Or of manners, Henry?
The parlourmaid opens the door and announces,
Miss Doolittle.
The parlourmaid withdraws. Higgins rises hastily and, running to Mrs. Higgins,
Here she is, Mother.
He stands on tiptoe and makes signs over his mother's head to Eliza to indicate to her which lady is her hostess. Eliza, who is exquisitely dressed, produces an impression of such remarkable distinction and beauty as she enters that they all rise quite flustered. Guided by Higgins' signals, she comes to Mrs. Higgins with studied grace. Liza speaks with pedantic correctness of pronunciation and great beauty of tone.
"How do you do, Mrs. Higgins?"
She gasps slightly in making sure of the H in Higgins, but is quite successful.
"Mr. Higgins told me I might come."
"Quite right. I'm very glad indeed to see you."
"How do you do, Miss Doolittle?"
She shakes hands with him.
"Colonel Pickering, is it not?"
"I feel sure. We have met before, Miss Doolittle. I remember your eyes." "How do you do?"
Eliza sits down on the ottoman gracefully in the place just left vacant by Higgins. Mrs. Eynsford Hill makes an introduction.
"My daughter, Clara." "How do you do?"
Clara, impulsively.
"How do you do?"
She sits down on the ottoman beside Eliza, devouring her with her eyes, and Freddy, coming to their side of the ottoman.
"I've certainly had the pleasure."
Mrs. Eynsford Hill introduces him.
"My son, Freddy." "How do you do?"
Freddy bows and sits down in the Elizabethan chair, infatuated. Higgins speaks suddenly.
"By George, yes. It all comes back to me."
They all stare at him.
"Covent Garden. Oh, what a damned thing."
"Henry, please."
He is about to sit on the edge of the table.
"Don't sit on my writing table. You'll break it."
"Sorry."
He goes to the divan, stumbling into the fender and over the fire irons on his way, extricating himself with muttered imprecations, and finishing his disastrous journey by throwing himself so impatiently on the divan that he almost breaks it. Mrs. Higgins looks at him, but controls herself and says nothing. A long and painful pause ensues. Mrs. Higgins speaks at last conversationally.
"Will it rain, do you think?"
Eliza responds.
"The shallow depression in the west of these islands is likely to move slowly in an easterly direction. There are no indications of any great change in the barometrical situation."
"Ha ha! Oh, how awfully funny!"
"What is wrong with that, young man? I bet I got it right."
"Killing!"
"I'm sure I hope it won't turn cold. There's so much influenza about. It runs right through our whole family regularly every spring."
"My aunt died of influenza, so they said."
Mrs. Eynsford Hill clicks her tongue sympathetically. Liza continues in the same tragic tone.
"But it's my belief they'd done the old woman in."
"Done her in?"
"Yes, Lord love you. Why should she die of influenza? She come through diphtheria right enough the year before. I saw her with my own eyes. Fairly blue with it she was. They all thought she was dead. But my father, he kept ladling gin down her throat till she came to so sudden that she bit the bowl off the spoon."
"Dear me!"
Liza piles up the indictment. What call would a woman with that strength in her have to die of influenza? What become of her new straw hat that should have come to me? Somebody pinched it, and what I say is, them as pinched it done her in.
Ooh, what does doing her in mean?
Higgins speaks hastily. That's the new small talk. To do a person in means to kill them. Mrs. Ainsford Hill looks to Eliza, horrified.
You surely don't mean that your aunt was killed.
Do I not? Them she lived with would have killed her for a hat pin, let alone a hat.
But it can't have been right for your father to pour spirits down her throat like that. It might have killed her.
Not her. Gin was mother's milk to her. Besides, he'd poured so much down his own throat that he knew the good of it.
Do you mean to say that he drank?
Drank? My word, something chronic.
Oh, how dreadful for you.
Not a bit. It never did him no harm, what I could see. But then he did not keep it up regular,
she speaks cheerfully.
On the burst, as you might say, from time to time, and always more agreeable when he had a drop in. When he was out of work, my mother used to give him fourpence and tell him to go out and not come back until he'd drunk himself cheerful and loving-like. There's lots of women has to make their husbands drunk to make them fit to live with.
Now, Liza is quite at her ease.
You see, it's like this. If a man has a bit of a conscience, it always takes him when he's sober, and then it makes him low-spirited. A drop of booze just takes that off and makes him happy.
She turns to Freddy, who is in convulsions of suppressed laughter.
Here, what are you sniggering at?
The new small talk. You do it so awfully well.
If I was doing it proper, what was you laughing at?
She turns to Higgins.
Have I said anything I oughtn't?
Mrs. Higgins interposes.
Not at all, Miss Doolittle. Well, that's a mercy, anyhow. What I always say is...
At this point, Higgins rises and looks at his watch. Liza, looking round at him, taking the hint and rising.
Well, I must go.
They all rise. Freddy goes to the door.
So pleased to have met you. Goodbye.
She shakes hands with Mrs. Higgins.
Goodbye. Goodbye, Colonel Pickering.
Goodbye, Miss Doolittle.
They shake hands. Liza nods to all the others.
Goodbye, all.
Freddy opens the door for her and speaks.
Are you walking across the park, Miss Doolittle? If so, walk. Not bloody likely. I am going in a taxi.
Pickering gasps and sits down. Freddy goes out on the balcony to catch another glimpse of Eliza. Mrs. Ainsford Hill, suffering from shock, responds.
Well, I really can't get used to the new ways.
Clara, throwing herself discontentedly into the Elizabethan chair.
Oh, it's all right, Mama. Quite right. People will think we never go anywhere or see anybody if you are so old-fashioned.
I dare say I am very old-fashioned, but I do hope you won't begin using that expression, Clara. I have got accustomed to hear you talking about men as rotters, and calling everything filthy and beastly, though I do think it horrible and unladylike. But this last is really too much. Don't you think so, Colonel Pickering?
Oh, don't ask me. I've been away in India for several years, and manners have changed so much that I sometimes don't know whether I'm at a respectable dinner table or in a ship's forecastle.
It's all a matter of habit. There's no right or wrong in it. Nobody means anything by it, and it's so quaint and gives such a smart emphasis to things that are not in themselves very witty. I find the new small talk delightful and quite innocent.
Mrs. Ainsford Hill rises.
Well, after that, I think it's time for us to go.
Pickering and Higgins also rise.
Clara rises. Oh, yes, we have three at-homes to go to still.
Goodbye, Mrs. Higgins.
Goodbye, Colonel Pickering. Goodbye, Professor Higgins.
Higgins, coming grimly at her from the divan and accompanying her to the door.
Goodbye. Be sure you try on that small talk at the three at-homes. Don't be nervous about it. Pitch it in strong.
I will.
Goodbye. Such nonsense, all this early Victorian prudery.
Higgins tempts her.
Such damned nonsense.
Such bloody nonsense.
Clara.
Ho-ho! Clara goes out radiant and conscious of being thoroughly up to date and is heard descending the stairs in a stream of silvery laughter. Freddy speaks to the heavens at large.
Well, I ask you.
He gives it up and comes to Mrs. Higgins.
Goodbye.
Mrs. Higgins shakes his hand.
Goodbye.
Would you like to meet Miss Doolittle again?
Oh, yes, I should, most awfully.
Well, you know my days.
Yes, thanks awfully. Goodbye.
Freddy exits.
Goodbye, Mr. Higgins.
Higgins responds, goodbye, goodbye. Mrs. Eidsford Hill turns to Pickering.
It's no use. I shall never be able to bring myself to use that word.
Don't. It's not compulsory, you know. You'll get on quite well without it.
Only Clara is so down on me if I am not positively reeking with the latest slang. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Pickering and Mrs. Eynsford Hill shake hands. Mrs. Eynsford Hill turns to Mrs. Higgins.
You mustn't mind, Clara.
Pickering, catching from her lowered tone that this is not meant for him to hear, discreetly joins Higgins at the window.
We're so poor, and she gets so few parties, poor child. She doesn't quite know.
Mrs. Higgins, seeing that her eyes are moist, takes her hand sympathetically and goes with her to the door.
But the boy is nice, don't you think so?
Oh, quite nice. I shall always be delighted to see him.
Thank you, dear. Goodbye.
Mrs. Eynsford Hill exits. Higgins responds eagerly.
Well, is Eliza presentable?
He swoops on his mother and drags her to the ottoman, where she sits down in Eliza's place with her son on her left. Pickering returns to his chair on the right.
You silly boy, of course she's not presentable. She's a triumph of your art and of her dressmakers. But if you suppose for a moment that she doesn't give herself away in every sentence she utters, you must be perfectly cracked about her.
But don't you think something might be done? I mean, something to eliminate the sanguinary element from her conversation.
Not as long as she is in Henry's hands.
Do you mean that my language is improper?
No, dearest. It would be quite proper, say, on a canal barge, but it would not be proper for her at a garden party.
Higgins is deeply injured.
Well, I must say.
Pickering interrupts him.
Come, Higgins. You must learn to know yourself. I haven't heard such language as yours since we used to review the volunteers in Hyde Park 20 years ago.
Higgins sulks.
Well, if you say so, I suppose I don't always talk like a bishop.
Mrs. Higgins quiets Henry with a touch.
Colonel Pickering, will you tell me what is the exact state of things in Wimpole Street?
Pickering is cheerful as if this completely changed the subject.
Well, I have come to live there with Henry. We work together at my Indian dialects, and we think it more convenient.
Quite so. I know all about that. It's an excellent arrangement. But where does this girl live?
With us, of course. Where would she live?
But on what terms? Is she a servant? If not, what is she?
I think I know what you mean, Mrs. Higgins.
Well, dash me if I do. I've had to work at the girl every day for months to get her to her present pitch. Besides, she's useful. She knows where my things are and remembers my appointments and so forth.
How does your housekeeper get on with her?
Mrs. Pierce? Oh, she's jolly glad to get so much taken off her hands, for before Eliza came, she had to have to find things and remind me of my appointments, but she's got some silly bee in her bonnet about Eliza. She keeps saying, "You don't think so," doesn't she, Pick?
Yes, that's the formula. You don't think, sir. That's the end of every conversation about Eliza. As if I ever stop thinking about the girl and her confounded vowels and consonants. I am worn out thinking about her and watching her lips and her teeth and her tongue, not to mention her soul, which is the quaintest of the lot.
You certainly are a pretty pair of babies playing with your live doll.
Playing? The hardest job I ever tackled. Make no mistake about that, Mother.
But you have no idea how frightfully interesting it is to take a human being and change her into a quite different human being by creating a new speech for her. It's filling up the deepest gulf that separates class from class and soul from soul.
Pickering draws his chair closer to Mrs. Higgins and bends over to her eagerly.
Yes, it's enormously interesting, I assure you, Mrs. Higgins. We take Eliza very seriously. Every week... Every day, almost, there is some new change.
He moves closer again. We keep records of every stage, dozens of gramophone discs and photographs. Higgins assails his mother's other ear.
Yes, by George, it's the most absorbing experiment I ever tackled. She regularly fills our lives up, doesn't she, Pick?
We're always talking Eliza.
Teaching Eliza.
Dressing Eliza.
What? Inventing new Elizas.
Higgins and Pickering speak together.
You know, she has the most extraordinary quickness of ear.
Oh, I assure you, my dear Mrs. Higgins, that girl,
just like a parrot. I've tried her with every...
is a genius. She can play the piano quite beautifully.
Possible sort of sound that a human being can make.
We have taken her to classical concerts and to music.
Continental dialects. African dialects. Hottentot.
Halls. And it's all the same to her. She plays everything.
Clicks. Things it took me years to get hold of. And
she hears right off when she comes home, whether it's...
she picks them up like a shot, right away, as if she had
Beethoven and Brahms or Lahore and Lionel Morricton.
Been at it all her life.
Though 6 months ago, she'd never as much touched a piano.
Mrs. Higgins puts her fingers in her ear, as they are by this time shouting one another down with an intolerable noise.
Shh!
They stop.
Oh, I beg your pardon.
Pickering draws his chair back apologetically.
Sorry. When Pickering starts shouting, nobody can get a word in edgeways.
Be quiet, Henry.
Colonel Pickering, don't you realize that when Eliza walked into Wimpole Street, something walked in with her?
Her father did, but Henry soon got rid of him. It would have been more to the point if her mother had, but as her mother didn't, something else did. But what?
Mrs. Higgins, unconsciously dating herself by the word.
A problem.
Oh, I see. The problem of how to pass her off as a lady.
I'll solve that problem. I've half solved it already.
No, you two infinitely stupid male creatures. The problem of what is to be done with her afterwards.
Oh, I don't see anything in that. She can go her own way with all the advantages I have given her.
The advantages of that poor woman who was here just now? The manners and habits that disqualify a fine lady from earning her own living without giving her a fine lady's income? Is that what you mean?
Pickering, indulgently and being rather bored.
Oh, that will be all right, Mrs. Higgins.
Pickering rises to go. Higgins rises also.
We'll find her some light employment.
She's happy enough. Don't you worry about her. Goodbye.
He shakes hands as if he were consoling a frightened child and makes for the door.
Anyhow, there's no good bothering now. The thing's done. Goodbye, Mother.
Higgins kisses his mother and follows Pickering. Pickering turns for a final consolation.
There are plenty of openings. We'll do what's right. Goodbye.
Higgins speaks to Pickering as they go out together.
Let's take her to the Shakespeare exhibition at Earl's Court.
Yes, let's. Her remarks will be delicious.
She'll mimic all the people for us when we get home.
Ripping!
Both men are heard laughing as they go downstairs. Mrs. Higgins rises with an impatient bounce and returns to her work at the writing table. She sweeps a litter of disarranged papers out of her way, snatches a sheet of paper from her stationery case, and tries resolutely to write. At the third line, she gives it up, flings down her pen, grips the table angrily, and exclaims,
"Oh, men! Men! Men!"
The end of Act 3 of Pygmalion by George Bernard Shaw. Read by Rick Kishner for Lit2Go on the web at fcit.usf.edu.